trying to get a handle on whether the Franklin Small Cap Growth Fund is worth considering. We've taken a deep dive into some key reports to bring you the critical insights quickly.
Yeah, exactly. Our mission here is really just to distill the essential info about this fund. You know, the tickers are FSAX for the advisor class and FSGRX, that's the Class A. We'll look at its investment strategy, performance, risks, the whole picture, basically.
Right, give you a clear, concise view. And interestingly, one of our sources, this report from Flexionator Analytics, it actually gives the fund a buy recommendation.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll definitely explore, you know, the thinking behind that, plus other details from the fund docs and that Flexionator analysis. Okay, let's get started. What are the absolute basics? How does this fund work?
Well, at its core, its goal is long-term capital growth. Pretty standard. And it primarily does that by investing in stocks, equity, securities of, well, smaller companies. The main rule is at least 80% of its assets have to be in companies with market caps generally under $1.5 billion, or the highest market cap in the Russell 2000 index when they buy it, whichever is greater.
Okay.
So, yeah, really focused on that small cap segment.
Got it. Hunting for growth in the small cap world. When did this specific class, the advisor one, launch, and who's running the show?
Right. So the advisor class, FSSAX, that started back on May 1st, 2000. As for who's managing it, it's Michael McCarthy and Brad Karas. McCarthy's been with the firm 33 years experience overall. Karas, 28 years with the firm, same experience level.
Wow.
Okay. So yeah, a very experienced pair managing the fund.
That's definitely reassuring, that kind of tenure. Okay, let's zoom in on that buy recommendation. Flexionation Analytics, right? What does that actually mean? And this Flexionation score, what is that?
So Flexion Analytics, based on their analysis, they put out a buy signal for the fund that was effective December 31st, 2024. And the Flexion score, it's basically their proprietary metric for how attractive they think a fund is. On that date, the score was 84.85. That's calculated daily, looking back over the prior year.
84.85.
Yeah, think of it like a grade. Higher score, better outlook, according to them.
Okay, so a pretty high grade in their system. What makes them feel so positive about it right now?
Well, a score that high, combined with their projections for excess returns, they're forecasting an annualized excess return of 86.36%, which is huge, and a respective return of 4.57%. It just signals a very favorable view. Their analysis suggests a strong chance the fund will, you know, outperform its peers going forward.
Those are some definitely some bold projections, but I noticed the score itself has moved around recently.
That's right, yeah. Compared to the month before the report, the score actually dipped a bit by 2.27 points. But if you look back to when they first issued that buy signal at the end of 2024, the score is actually up overall by 1.52 points.
Ah, okay.
So a recent small dip, but the trend since the signal is still positive.
Interesting. Short-term wobble within a longer positive trend. Mm-hmm. You mentioned some other flexation metrics too. Tail ratio, batting average.
Yeah.
What do those tell us?
Yeah, those add a bit more color. Huh. The tail ratio is 0.98. That suggests almost an even balance between the potential for really high positive returns versus really low negative ones. Then you have high upside at 9.22% and high downside at 9.44%. That gives you a sense of the potential extremes they see.
Okay.
Now, the Flexion batting average, 35.71%. That's basically their track record for buy-sell signals on this fund specifically, how often they've been right in the past.
35.71.
Yeah, and then the buy versus sell signal, 8.16. That number suggests their conviction in the current buy signal is significantly stronger than their historical sell signals have been for this fund.
Right, okay, so maybe not a perfect prediction record overall, but they feel pretty strongly about this buy call right now.
Yeah.
Let's shift gears then. How has the fund actually done for investors? What do the returns look like?
Okay, performance. Looking at the average annual total returns for the advisor class, and this is key, before sales charges, over the last 3 years, it averaged 8.09%. 5 years, it's 10.77%. And 10 years, a pretty solid 14.07% per year on average.
Yep.
Since it started back in 2000, the average annual return comes out to 7.02%.
Those longer term numbers, 10 years especially, look quite good. But what about more recently? Markets have been choppy.
Absolutely. And the cumulative returns show that volatility really clearly. Just in the 3 months before this report date, the fund was actually down 12.80%.
Right.
But year to date, it was up 12.80%. And for the full year 2024, a 13.02% gain. 2023 was a banner year, up 31.05%. But then you look at 2022, a big drop, minus 30.28%. 2021 was basically flat, 0.46%. 2020 was huge, up 41.50%.
Wow.
So yeah, you can definitely see some major swings in there.
really underscores the volatility you can get with this kind of strategy. How does that translate into, you know, actual growth?
Yeah.
Like that $10,000 example.
Right. So if you had put $10,000 into the advisor class right at inception, May 2000, and assuming no sales charges were paid, that investment would have grown to $61,030 by March 31st, 2025.
$61,000. Okay.
Yeah, it really shows the power of compounding over the long term, even with those bumpy years mixed in.
Definitely puts the long-term potential in perspective.
Yeah.
Now, how does this stack up against, say, the broader market or similar funds? What about benchmarks?
Good question. It's usually compared against the Russell 2000 Growth Index. That's kind of the standard benchmark for small cap growth. The S&P 500 is also often used as a broader market comparison, even though it's large cap. The reports we looked at, they provide the returns for both those benchmarks over the same periods we just discussed.
Right.
So you can directly compare. You can see where the Franklin Fund maybe did better or worse than its benchmark or the S&P 500 in different years or over different stretches. That relative performance is crucial.
Absolutely. It's not just the number itself, but how it compares.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's dig into the fund's makeup a bit more. Characteristics, risk stats.
Sure. As of the report date, the fund's total net assets were about $2.3 billion. That was spread across holdings in 153 different companies.
Okay.
The average market cap of those companies was around $540.8 million. So definitely in that small cap zone. And looking at valuation metrics, price to book was 2.78, and price to earnings, the trailing 12-month kind, was 25.48.
And those risk numbers, beta, Sharpe ratio, they can sound a bit technical.
Yeah.
What's the simple takeaway on risk here?
Yeah, they can be intimidating. The main idea is how they measure the fund's risk compared to the market, specifically its benchmark. The beta is 0.97. That means its price tends to move pretty closely with the Russell 2000 Growth Index, maybe just slightly less volatile. A beta of 1 would mean it moves exactly in line, so 0.97 is very close.
Right, slightly less jumpy than the benchmark.
Exactly. R squared is 0.93. That's high, meaning the benchmark's movements explain about 93% of the fund's movements. Very strong correlation. Sharpe ratio is 0.15. That measures return per unit of risk. Higher is generally better, but 0.15 is, well, it's positive. Standard deviation, 18.25%. That's a measure of its total volatility over the last 3 years. Higher means more swings. Alpha is 0.30%. That suggests it generated a tiny bit of return above what its beta and the benchmark's return would predict.
A little extra, okay.
A little, yeah. Information ratio, 0.04, measures the consistency of that alpha relative to risk. And tracking error, 6.53%, shows how much its returns deviated from the benchmark's returns.
So bottom line on risk stats, it tracks its benchmark pretty closely, slightly less volatile, with maybe a very small historical edge in risk-adjusted return.
That's a fair summary based on these three-year numbers, yes.
Okay. So who are the actual companies? What are the top holdings?
All right. The top 10 holdings listed were BWX Technologies, BellRing Brands, Arcosa, Inc., Kratos Defense and Security Solutions.
Kratos, okay, defense.
Yeah. Integer Holdings, Beacon Roofing Supply, Vontier Core, Lattice Semiconductor.
Semiconductor's interesting.
AR Corp and Granite Construction Inc. That gives you a flavor of the specific companies they're currently most invested in.
Looking at those names, Kratos, Lattice, hints at certain sectors. How does the overall sector allocation look compared to the benchmark?
Good point. Sector allocation is key. The fund's biggest weight is in information technology, followed by industrials, then healthcare. Consumer discretionary and financials are also significant chunks. And comparing it to the benchmark, the Russell 2000 growth is really insightful. For instance, the fund has 25.9% in infotech.
Okay.
The benchmark only has 18.53% in that sector.
So a definite overweight in tech.
A significant one, yeah. Suggests they see more growth potential in smaller tech companies than the index average, and conversely, they might be underweight in other areas. These kinds of bets, these overweights and underweights, can really drive performance differences relative to the benchmark.
Makes sense. That tech tilt could explain some of the volatility, too. Now, fees. Always important. Yeah. What does it cost to own this fund?
Right. Costs. For the advisor class, FSSAX, the gross expense ratio is 0.84%, but there are currently fee waivers in place, bringing the net expense ratio down to 0.83%.
Net 0.83.
Yes, but importantly, those waivers are only contractually guaranteed until August 31st, 2025. After that, they could potentially go away and expenses would rise.
Good to know. That date is important. What about other share classes, like the Class A?
Yeah, the costs vary. Class A, that's FSGRX, has a higher net expense ratio of 1.08%, and it also comes with a potential maximum upfront sales charge or load of 5.50%.
5.5% upfront. Wow.
Yeah, that's a significant initial cost. Class C shares have an even higher net expense ratio, 1.83%, and typically involve a deferred sales charge if you sell within a certain period. So you really need to pay attention to which share class you're buying and the associated fees and sales charges.
Absolutely critical. Those differences can eat into returns significantly.
Yeah.
Okay, finally, let's talk risks. What are the main ones investors need to be aware of?
Well, first, the step in disclaimer. All investing involves risk, including potentially losing your principal investment. No guarantees. Specifically for this fund, because it focuses on small and mid-cap stocks, there's generally higher risk and more price volatility compared to large-cap funds. These smaller companies can be more sensitive to economic shifts.
Right, more ups and downs.
Exactly. There's also style risk. The fund focuses on growth stocks. That style can go out of favor in the market sometimes, leading to underperformance, even if the companies themselves are doing okay. Concentration risk is another one. If the fund holds a lot in certain sectors, like we saw with tech or specific industries, that lack of diversification can increase volatility.
Makes sense.
Liquidity risk, the chance they might struggle to sell a less traded small cap stock quickly without affecting the price. That's a factor too. And ESG, environmental, social, governance factors. The prospectus notes they may consider these, but they aren't determinative. They don't necessarily evaluate ESG for every single investment.
Got it. So not an ESG-focused fund per se. Okay, that's a really thorough overview. So just to recap quickly, we have this buy signal from Flexation based on their score and projections. The fund itself is zeroed in on small cap growth, run by a very seasoned team.
Mm-hmm.
Performance-wise, strong long-term numbers, but with some very significant bumps along the way, especially recently.
Yep, that volatility is clear.
And the risks are pretty much what you'd expect for this kind of focused small cap growth strategy.
That sums it up well. Our aim here was really just to give you that shortcut, that streamlined understanding based on these specific source documents.
Right. So here's something for you, the listener, to think about. You have that strong buy signal from late last year, but also that little dip in the Flexation score more recently. What other factors, what other research might you want to look into before deciding if this fund truly fits your own investment goals and your comfort level with risk?